Hi, welcome to the podcast, The Socially Inspired Investor, where you can expand your knowledge of rewarding investment strategies and address environmental and socially responsible investing alternatives with important insights from experts in the field. I'm Pat O'Neill. These monthly programs feature ESG, environmental, social, and governance stories in focus, and deep dive discussions with notable people in the industry. This time the topic, investing for social advocacy and gender diversification. Also featured in companion articles in the Socially Inspired Investor Digest at sociallyinspiredinvestor.com. From women leadership to Black Lives Matter, we're hearing a lot these days about social advocacy and racial and gender equality. So where do companies and investors fit in as potential players and influences in these issues? We have two guests to talk about that today. A little later, we'll sit down with Patrick Drum, Senior Investment Analyst and Portfolio Manager of the Saturna Sustainable Bond Fund and Amana Participation Fund. First, we welcome Eric Glass, Portfolio Manager, Fixed Income Impact Strategies at AllianceBernstein. Eric, great to have you with us today.
Pat, thank you very much for the opportunity to talk.
And we're talking about social advocacy and gender diversification. Eric, can you tell us a little bit more about what role bonds play in all of this?
I'm on the fixed income side, the bond side, but specifically within the tax exempt side of the business. So just think about tax advantaged income. It's referred to as municipal bonds. And so that's largely around making investments in infrastructure, whether that's education, schools, healthcare, mass transportation, clean water and sanitation, electric utilities, workforce development, economic development. Those are basically the six pillars or so of what we do. And effectively, what we're just responsible for building stuff. Mm-hmm. What we do is invest in historically marginalized and historically under-resourced communities. Each one of our investments has a specific intention, which gets to your question. So Unfortunately, there are many, many cases around the country, whether that's in education or as it relates to education access, health access, where there are great disparities in communities. And those disparities usually run along socio-demographic lines. And what we do is we try to reduce those disparities. And so in a way, we're obviously in this moment of now, between COVID and social injustice, police brutality, alternatives to policing, et cetera, we're having this big conversation around mass incarceration. And I refer to mass incarceration as being the back end of this. We have a problem with mass incarceration because we didn't get the front end right. We're talking about education, early childhood education, and primary secondary education. We're talking about high quality healthcare and access to clean water and clean sanitation. That's equality. Having access to these resources and to this infrastructure goes a long way to raising people's quality of life and their outcomes throughout their life.
I was going to say, it seems like a lot of these projects, then it could take a little while to develop where you actually see, or where the community gets to see all the benefits, but eventually it has a ripple effect.
Yeah, I mean, I would actually say it's both of those things. So one of the examples that I would cite is we made an investment in Essex County, in the Essex County Improvement Authority, and the use of proceeds were going to the city of Newark, New Jersey. And the city of Newark, New Jersey, for those who don't know, historically been under-resourced, largely a community of color. And they had been suffering with lead leaching into their water, largely because service lines between the mains and the house are old and were made of lead, and it would be consumed in the home. And what the use of proceeds for the deal that we ended up participating in went to replacing the 18,000 identified lead service lines in the city of Newark. And so that was back towards the end of 2019. To date, over 11,000 of those lead service lines have been replaced. And so from my perspective, that's the beginning of the end to lead in the water in Newark, New Jersey. And that can be a pretty quick fix.
As far as the Black Lives Matter movement is going, do you think that that is definitely having an influence on how governments are financing projects, for that matter, companies as well? Or is it a little bit too soon to tell yet?
That is a very big question. So what I would say, when you sort of mentioned corporate America, this is just me talking. I don't really have much faith in corporate America to do the right thing. And so I see Black Lives Matter. I see COVID-19 as an opportunity to merchandise. I think the proof is in the pudding. And so I would say it's around Black Lives Matter and around COVID and the disparities that COVID helped us all sort of come to grips with. As far as Black Lives Matter is concerned, look, We've been investing like this for the last 4 to 5 years. It didn't take COVID-19, it didn't take George Floyd or Breonna Taylor for us to think about these disparities. By the way, those disparities, you know, happened centuries before we got to the table, right? So we've only been doing this for 5 years, right? So I'm not patting myself on the back here, but we're not going to change the way that we approach our mission or our process because Black Lives Matter is in vogue. It's great, but Black Lives Matter has taken on a much more significant role in our society, within our consciousness. My big fear is that it's a fleeting moment in history. The next shiny object comes to our collective attention and we move away from the sustainable systematic changes that we need to make around equity, around gender diversity, around diversity and inclusion in general. And so that's my big fear. Do I have a lot of hope, confidence that this is sustainable? I got to be honest with you, no. Throughout history, we've had opportunities to go in the right direction as a collective society, and we've chosen to not take the right direction, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. So I don't have any higher confidence that this time around will be different. I hope and I pray. I'm not a very religious person, but I certainly hope that we take to heart what we've learned over the last 3 to 4 months and truly make changes at a societal level, but also using finance to help us make those changes.
Well, it seems the municipal bond market supplying financing for these projects, at least that is a big step in the right direction. And you can't ignore those things. You can't ignore the big improvement in a health facility or, you know, or a new school building. I mean, these things actually do result in practical benefits for those communities.
Undoubtedly. When we think about primary and secondary education, there are so many school districts throughout the country where the average age of a school building is 60, 70, 80 years old. And so what does it say to a child that has to go to school there? What does it say to a teacher that has to teach there? From my perspective, what it means is you don't matter. And that, as an impact investor, is abhorrent and repugnant. And the intention that we have around our education investment is to reduce achievement gaps, but it's also to reduce opportunity gaps. There are opportunity gaps that exist within the infrastructure. We can talk about outcomes and achievements all you want, and we do that. But if we're going to ask all kids to run the same race, we should have them start at the same place. And that place starts with injecting equity in the state-of-the-art facilities that these kids have.
I know that you're focused on the projects the municipal bonds would be funding, but companies are involved in these things too, because the governments need vendors, they need suppliers, they need companies that are going to be working on these projects. So is part of your effort also vetting some of these companies, also seeing what their policies are in the way of racial inclusion and gender diversification?
I'll be honest with you that generally speaking is not what I do. We have other sustainable products, both on the fixed income side and the equity side, that deal more specifically with corporations and vetting those corporations. But obviously, when we think about equality, when we think about gender diversification and diversity and inclusion in general, it's not just one sector of economy that's going to be responsible for that, right? If you think about it, this is a all hands on deck moment, and that to have success, we need everybody on the same page. That means government, that means nonprofits, that means foundations, endowments, that means corporations. To sort of look at it in a slightly different way, when we think about the environment and we think about getting to a low carbon economy, if you will, there are some incredible numbers of investments. I've read up to $90 trillion of infrastructure investment over the next 10 to 15 years globally to get us to a low carbon economy. Government can't do that alone. Nonprofits can't do that alone. We need global corporations. We need global attention, and we need to do it in a coherent and consistent way. But that is just as important as we talk about equality and gender inclusion. This is not just one entity or one sector picking up the flag or carrying the ball over the goal line. It's everyone, all hands on deck. Let's conscientiously, rigorously, and thoughtfully move in a specific direction.
Are there areas where municipal bonds would have an impact on gender diversification? It seems a lot more of the racial injustice issues are involved here.
Yeah, I would agree with that point that the vast majority of what we do is around ethnic diversity. As far as gender diversity, one of the things that we sort of look at and think about, which is pretty much aligned with ethnic diversity, in many of the projects and many of the entities that we invest in, there's a lot of capital improvements that need to be made. And a lot of those capital improvements, a lot of the dollars that go towards those plans come from the federal government. And so we're very active in asking the question, well, how many of the contracts that you have out for the construction, for the development of whatever project you are trying to complete are going to women-owned businesses and minority-owned businesses so that we make sure that they are an integral part of the overall economy. Unfortunately, with municipalities, when you think about enterprise systems, electric utilities, water and sewer utilities, these have not necessarily been a oasis for women. And we're seeing more and more influence of women in these sectors, but historically they've been pretty male dominated. And we'd certainly love to see that change.
Well, doesn't it seem like interest in these types of investments will spur companies on to take more action, because there is a demand for this kind of investment, both on the corporate side and on the municipal side?
Most definitely. I don't really like to think about it in commercial terms, but there is a commercial opportunity here. So, over the next 20 to 30 years, there's going to be this tremendous transfer of wealth from an older matriarch. I got my patriarchy messed up here. So that's bad. That's bad.
That's really bad. Trying to have diversification.
Exactly. I'm trying to inject diversification where there is no diversification. So basically older white men, right? Because that's where most wealth is held these days. And that transfer of wealth is going to go from them to their wives and to their children. And what the wives and children have basically told us is that they want to better align their values with the way in which they invest. And we're talking about a very significant, tens of trillions of dollars of wealth transfer. And it's also an opportunity to change what we've done in the past, basically aligning ourselves with what our investors want. If investors want to align their values with the way in which they invest, well, we're doing that. And we can do that through investing in education and healthcare, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, the thing that really is going to move the needle for this type of investing is the bottoms up. It is having clients come to us and say, this is the way that we want to do investing going forward. What do you have on your menu that allows us to fulfill that desire?
Eric, I realize you're involved in municipals, but what kind of things overall does AllianceBernstein look for in companies when developing a more gender diverse and racially inclusive portfolio?
Yeah, I mean, certainly we have developed portfolios with purpose. What percentage of the board is made up of people of color and women? Let's start looking at the workforce as a whole, and you can stratify that into, your titles from senior vice president to assistant vice president. How many of all those people are people of color and women? How are you recruiting people of color and women? How are you supporting them, mentoring them throughout this process so they not only get into the organization, but they rise to positions of impact and positions of power? And then, of course, you have to look at gender pay gaps. The data within corporate America is getting better. It has some ways to go, but these are certainly things that are on our mind as it relates to evaluating diversity and inclusion.
It seems that when companies do contribute in some way regarding these issues, it makes a big splash. I know PepsiCo, for instance, pledged over $400 million for racial equity initiatives recently, and U.S. Bank in Minneapolis announced plans to make multiple investments in that area. So when companies do something good, they also benefit from the good publicity.
Yeah, and that's where I put my cynical hat on. Look, in terms of the steps that corporate America is taking to address some of these issues, bravo, kudos. I'm obviously very supportive, assuming that they are genuine, thoughtful, and really trying to be embedded in the organization's DNA. Yeah, you're right. There's some PR benefit to this. There's a lot of goodwill to this, but there has to be follow through to make these changes sustainable. There has to be constant pressure, constant follow through. What exactly are the projects that you're investing in? What are the baseline of how you found the situation? And then over what period of time are you getting to your target? And what is your target? I'm all in favor of any company or any individual saying that they want to donate to a specific cause or a specific issue. That's great. But I just don't want to leave it at the announcement that it's now incumbent upon us as a society to hold these people and these organizations to account for the representations that they've made. And if they don't follow through on those representations, then they should be called out.
It certainly seems that investors can be part of that checks and balances system.
Most definitely. They can vote with their feet. They can engage management on these issues. And it's incumbent upon individual investors. It's incumbent upon institutional investors. You know, one of the things that we sort of pride ourselves on is the idea that we are engaged investors, that we are voting our proxy, that we are taking particular interest in what companies are doing from an environmental and social perspective and voting those proxies accordingly. By the way, we're trying to do that on the municipal side too. We make an investment, but then it's how do we engage with this municipality to expedite the environmental and social change that we want to see. Money talks, and as they say, BS walks. Another way of saying it, the hand that rocks the cradle is the hand that rules the world. And for better or for worse, money does that. And so we as investors have a great deal of influence, assuming that we choose to use that influence.
It does look like there is a lot of opportunity for investors to get involved in this area, to balance portfolios, to help out a good cause at the same time, make some money too.
I can't really speak to you right now and just sort of say, hey, we're doing it for the cause, right? I mean, the simple fact of the matter is, look, we're using environmental, social, and governance to do two things, identify value and mitigate risk. And the simple fact that if you're operating in the public markets and you can do that better than your competition, there's absolutely no reason why over a mid and long term, you shouldn't meet or even beat the benchmark. Right. I often tell people that if you don't meet or exceed the benchmark, it's not because you chose to do impact investing or sustainable investing or thematic investing. It's because your portfolio manager, me, didn't do a very good job and you should fire me and move on with your life. That's what this is. From my perspective, it's really about being intentional and thoughtful about what you're doing with your money. I'm not trying to convince wealthy people or people in general to give more away. I'm not competing with your philanthropic dollars. I encourage people to give as much away as they want and be as philanthropic as they want. But with the money that they have that they're dedicating to their own portfolios, can we be more thoughtful and holistic about what we're doing with our money? And that's where I come from when I talk to clients and try to persuade them to think about what their dollars are actually doing.
It comes through that you're very passionate about this, but why have you been so passionate about what's been done in the past and your optimism about the future?
I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if I weren't optimistic about the future, about the optimism that I have around the next generation of investors as it relates to our environment and social justice. We have come a long way. We are still very early innings in this battle, but I truly believe that finance is not the evil incarnate. And I think that the next generation of investors are thinking in a very different way, that in order to improve life for all of us, you know, I mean, Mahatma Gandhi talked about the ideas, you know, the best reflection of a society is how we treat the people who have the least. And I'm a true devotee of that perspective. And it's just our society is better. It is more productive. It is more economically efficient. It is healthier when there is more equality. And that's what I'm striving for.
That's great. Eric, where can our listeners find out a little bit more about you and about AllianceBernstein?
It's going to be bernstein.com. So if you want to learn more about what we're doing from a purpose-driven perspective, bernstein.com will take you directly to what we're trying to accomplish from a firm-wide perspective. Obviously, we're a part of that, and hopefully we're all a growing part of that.
Well, thanks, Eric, for being with us today. Eric Glass, Portfolio Manager, Fixed Income Impact Strategies at AllianceBernstein. Our next guest is Patrick Drum, Senior Investment Analyst and Portfolio Manager of the Saturna Sustainable Bond Fund and Amana Participation Fund. Patrick, it's nice to hear from you today.
Yeah, and I appreciate the invitation.
There's a big focus on social justice, racial inclusion, gender diversity. It seems to me that a lot of people, a lot of investors are not even aware that these types of investments or this type of philosophy even exist in investing.
That is correct. It's funny. When I was getting my toes into this water a little over a dozen years ago, there were very few asset managers that focused in that region. In 1995, there were only 55 value-based funds that existed, with only about $12 billion under management. Now we're at the point under a trillion of funds that focus on this.
So this involves really a lot more about behavior and particular practices as a company more so than their business aspects.
That is correct. As a bond manager, we don't have the ability to engage them like a shareholder equity, where you have those annual meetings and you can voice concerns and create a proxy vote. And so character and credit as an investor that we're looking at, the character of that management, the ability of them to provide long-term stewardship guidance, but more importantly, being good stewards in the community, has a real important impact on not just performance, but building investor confidence. You can have an organization that has the capacity to pay, but its character is continuously being questioned. That in itself will cause a lot of investors pause, as well as ourselves.
So you think a lot more investors are paying more attention to that sort of thing?
Absolutely.
What about the gender diversity part of all of this?
It's really been an interesting aspect. The study on the gender considerations, particularly at the board level, the very senior management, Credit Suisse did a study that could span over a 10-year period. They found that just having one female on the board when compared to an all-male board, those companies generated a return on equity or higher performance of about 3.5%. Deutsche did a similar study and it was about 4%. CI, which is a data analytics firm in the financial industry, said, well, what if we had three females? What would that look like over a 5-year period? On average, it exceeded by 10% on profitability.
Do you find that a lot of investors feel more comfortable, say, you know, U.S. investors staying close to home and sticking with investments related to the U.S. or their own regions? Or are they willing to go globally?
We all want to root for the home team, and that home bias is because what we know. But to give a little context, when you think about that, 85% of the world's population live in developed or developing parts of the world. It'd be equivalent if you and I were to go to the ice cream store. Let's say we went to Baskin Robbins, 31 flavors. And all of a sudden we walked in and they took off 19 of those flavors from us. Certainly, we may have what we want, but that diversity and options certainly reduce our potential for better choices. Simply by extending beyond the natural borders, you're finding that you're offering, from an investor standpoint, the benefit of added diversification. It actually helps reduce risk and provides a broader opportunity for return.
Are there investments, too, that we're talking about that would be involved in the United States or North America?
Oh, absolutely. There is a host of great issuers that we own in the United States that both incorporate gender diversity as well as higher degree of sensitivity and thought leadership. And again, as a bond investor, I can certainly speak to more of the environmental scorecard that's attracted me to them. Iron Mountain is a particular company that first comes to mind. And we all know that we store documents as a company's and personal level, but they're also storing online. All their operations in the United States is essentially its energy consumption is from green sources. Starbucks was the very first issuer of a social bond. And that company has demonstrated a long history of providing a collaborative framework with their farmers. So as investors, we have a variety of different ways to express, whether it be more of a social tilt or aligning more investments that have this racial diversification, because at the end of the day, we're trying to meet the investment objective, but we find that those investment objectives truly serve the investor by also considering these intangibles that are so important in getting a sense of the character for the diversity, gender diversity, and overall stewardship within the community.
Patrick, what would be an example of a good diversity program?
A good diversity program is one that is being defined as having targeted recruitment, managerial on both the board as also senior executives, and having ongoing monitoring and audit. That is what's considered strong.
What about some specific companies? What kind of things do companies do that catch your attention as a portfolio manager?
A couple companies that come to mind. AXA Financial. I mean, we're talking boring insurance. They're a French-based firm. And what you'll find is that French firms really have a real strong sense of heightened degree of diversity and gender inclusion. AXA Financial in particular has an explicit program. Right now, they have 53% women representation on the board. And they have specific gender targets among their executive and management staff. Currently, there's about 32% of the top senior executives are women. From a gender diversified board representation, AXA is probably one of the stronger firms that are out there. Another firm that brings an example, Danone, you know, the yogurt company and the food. They've actually created what is known as one share, one vote. They're seeking to engage their employees so that everyone now has essentially one share so they can create this collective ability to bargain and vote their expressive views as part of the overall strategic direction of that firm. No other firm in the world has done such as something as progressive as they have. With carbon emissions, their goal is to be carbon neutral by 2050. And you say, well, that's a bit of a ways out. And you're like, yes. But in the agricultural community, CO2 with tractors and and all sort of the infrastructure associated with agriculture is huge. And so it's about a 30% part of carbon emissions globally, and their goal is to be completely neutral. So to do this as a large organization, to have these aspirational goals, both structural for inclusion, as well as for meeting gender, as well as environmental, these are the type of firms that we really find that's attractive in meeting these agendas. We also have to consider, are they appropriate for the investment portfolio? Because some of these issues might not offer attractive investment returns. So we have to really strike this balance.
So it seems that while some firms in the U.S. are focusing on racial equality and gender diversity, many companies outside the United States are more advanced in these areas, and we have a lot to learn from the rest of the world.
We do.
Since it's become more popular to talk about issues like racial justice and women leadership, are you concerned that some companies are overselling themselves in, say, their annual reports, but not really achieving everything they say they are?
Companies that do a better job of marketing or advocating to their corporate social performance have been able to demonstrate higher type of returns because it provides that illusion that they're doing far more than they really are. I will look, for example, at companies filing of legal complaints. I went to the banking industry and I'll go and see what banks have experienced greater consumer litigation claims, because for a consumer to go all the way against these large U.S. firms, they're pretty upset. You know, these banks have large and talented legal teams. It's kind of being a detective. So there's a lot of thought and detail in trying to incorporate racial diversity and gender diversity. The devil's really in the details, because a lot of companies don't disclose, or it's partial. And what you see one year also might look very different the next year. So take that on the ground, what I call that sidewalk talk, but also kind of walking around that block and talking to the supply chain and those issuers and that whole community. I'm really trying to get a sense of what's really going on.
What do you think the Black Lives Matter movement is going to have on investments?
Oh, that's a fabulous question. Hopefully the outcome is that you're going to find not just the value, and you'll see more programs that deal with inner city challenges, but more importantly, offering greater skills and opportunities for those communities that have been adversely affected. But I think sometimes you need the darkness to create the catalyst for the light. And my true hope is that we'll find a more means of providing these investable opportunities that raise the bar and elevate that community, because we all benefit from that. Looking at publicly traded companies and issuers, these communities are both consumers as well as employees. There's a symbiotic relationship, and hopefully we'll find a much more broader alignment. It's still pretty early because this galvanizing event just occurred, but it's been existing for decades. I don't have a hard answer. So I'm simply on the aspirational, but when I travel globally, I see a lot more of this. Certain communities have a much more broader and open perspective, like Canada and parts of, you know, Asia, that you just typically don't see.
So it seems, if I hear what you're saying, is that companies are taking on the role where we've relied on governments funding community programs, for example. And by doing that, they're helping to make a community stronger with a more stable workforce and helping the company at the same time. So a forward-looking company might see that growth potential and sees, say, the Black Lives Matter movement and what it represents in an investment context to help solve that problem and help improve the big picture, because we all need each other.
We do. We don't typically look to the corporate world or investments as being part of the solution, but to some of these examples, hopefully, they're demonstrating not just the importance of, you know, they have to do business, they have to be profitable in creating a product, but they can also work as partners with their community and employees, but also being good stewards. And to me, this is what it's about, is elevating everybody. We all win when all of us gain.
All right, Patrick, if listeners want to find out a little bit more about Saturna Capital, where do they get that information?
Online, saturnacapital.com. You can see a lot of our work with regard to how we think about sustainability, how we integrate it, characteristics of how these funds align with them in meeting these variety of racial, environmental metrics. You'll find a lot of information about who we are, how we do things, and more importantly, how we can help investors align their values with their interests.
We've been talking to Patrick Drum, Senior Investment Officer and Portfolio Manager of the Saturna Sustainable Bond Fund and Amana Participation Fund. This podcast is copyrighted by Seasons of Advice Wealth Management. It is published and provided for informational and entertainment purposes only, and not for individualized investment advice. Please go to our website, soawealth.com, for additional information. We'll be back next time with more ESG stories in focus and more deep dive discussions and companion socially inspired Investor Digest articles. Our podcast mission is to make socially inspired and ESG investing more consumer friendly and achievable. This is the Socially Inspired Investor.